The Problems with Food Media That Nobody Wants to Talk About. Well, that's a blog post that recently got my attention. It's from First We Feast, written by Chris Schoenberger and Justin Bolus. It tapped into what we've seen happening. Some downright laziness in recipe writing, as in the recipes don't work, not getting the facts straight, not to mention certain restaurant critics accepting free food and favors from the very places about which they're supposed to be doing unbiased reviews. Now, mind you, the food media is populated with a lot of genuine pros, but the question here is, who to trust? Well, here's one take. In addition to co-authoring The Problems with Food Media, Chris Schoenberger is editor-in-chief of First We Feast. Chris, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Why do you think that the mainstream food media, you know, the big websites, the food magazines, newspapers, TV, why do you think they're not writing about the food issues that concern a lot of people?
You know, I think there's, you know, that's a huge question. And of course, I don't have all the answers, but two main things that I see time and again is one that, you know, as the publishing landscape has changed, budgets have contracted, a lot of food magazines have sort of been focused grouped into being something that is more sales driven as opposed to a magazine that sort of, you know, was one of the great food magazines to ever exist, Gourmet, whose mandate extended beyond recipes, beyond cooking, to social issues. You know, the problem with slave labor around tomatoes, people like David Foster Wallace writing about lobsters. So, you know, without those budgets, but also without that mandate and that ambition and support system to pursue stories like that, they're never going to happen. Now, another huge part of what we're seeing in food media now is, of course, driven by the pressures of the web. And that's something that I'm more intimately experienced with, having written a lot for the web. And no matter what people's drive is, at a certain point, if they're publishing on such intense deadlines so quickly, chasing the dragon of, you know, search engine optimization and page views, you're just naturally going to have a race to the bottom at times.
Yeah, one of the things that concerns me that I see a lot of is incorrect information. Mm-hmm. The digging seems to have lessened because often magazines and other entities will have people who do nothing but read through a piece before it's published and check and call the author and say, you know, what do you mean by this? And where can I find information on that? And I wonder if they've gone on strike or there are just not as many of them. And, you know, this to me is very disturbing because there's so much lack of good information out there.
Absolutely. I mean, I think when budgets atrophy, the first two positions to go are fact checkers and copy editors. Mm. And that's a huge shame. And yeah. It causes a lot of problems, a lot of sloppiness, a lot of misinformation. But the reality is that those two steps make things slower and they don't move at the pace of the web, which is everyone wants to be first. Everyone wants to get their story on Facebook before the next outlet. So it's a really rapid pace. You know, it's like a game of telephone, but for web journalism. If a misstated fact starts somewhere, the next story might have two incorrect facts. The next story might have three incorrect facts, and it snowballs and snowballs and snowballs, which is why you see people, you know, coming out all the time, and now they have a direct line to their audience through Twitter. You know, celebrities are always correcting the crazy stories that come out about them.
Yeah, yeah. One of the other things that you make a strong point about is that the food media is soft.
You know, when I said food media is soft, I think it's that people are holding back their opinions that I know that they have. And I guess I was frustrated that I don't see that on the page as much as perhaps I would like to. And I think that readers would love to see it. And I think it's symptomatic of a food media that has an awkward relationship with the subject that it covers. And there's not a clear line between whether this is boosterism and trying to, you know, continue to convince the public that food is art, you know, chefs are the new rock stars, or, you know, show people when the emperor has no clothes and ask the right questions about food and restaurants.
Is this because people want to make sure they have access?
I think access is a big part of it. You know, listen, it's a pretty small world. Food in New York is a bubble, and then you take that to other smaller markets, and it's even more so. So even if there's not overtly unethical things going on, like pay for play, you know, where someone's giving you handouts to write a good review, which is more something you see at, like, the bottom end of the blogosphere as opposed to legitimate outlets, there's still a reality of the fact that all of these writers and editors and chefs are at the same parties, you know the same people. And I think people are a little bit hesitant to say anything that would get them kicked out of the club, so to speak.
Yeah.
And sure, it can feel good to go to a new restaurant and have the chef throw you some extra dishes and come say hello. But I'd like to think that journalists are more interested in telling stories that are going to help their readers make informed decisions than sort of living a glamorous lifestyle.
Goodbye to the free martinis. Chris, let's talk about money. Can people make a living these days as a food writer?
There are a lot of people making a living in food writing now, but it's becoming more and more difficult. And, you know, Amanda Hesser, who started a great site called Food 52, wrote an excellent piece in 2012 where she said, you know, if I'm really honest, I can't recommend people go into food writing anymore. You know, there's not enough pay at magazines and the business model doesn't support it. And as I said, I've seen people walk away from the industry. And I want to just say, I think it's really hard for young writers to come up in food media because the entry-level jobs are as low as $25,000 in New York City. You know, anyone who's at all familiar with living in New York City knows that that is not really enough to get by on. And there's an extra element that a lot of people don't see, which is in order to be able to write about food and be conversant in food, you have to go out and eat food. And there are not, you know, reserves of money at a lot of these places anymore to send people out to get educated and have the experience that's going to inform their writing. So not only do you have these minuscule salaries, but to write the stories that get you to the next small salary, you got to spend a bunch of it on food and drink.
So how do you see the future?
You know, I'm glad you asked, because while I think it's important to think about these things, I don't want to paint a negative view of food media, because I actually think it's an incredibly exciting time when, you know, some of the legacy brands are being forced to rethink what they are. Even more excitingly, there's a ton of energy coming in from, you know, younger editors and writers and new outlets. You know, non-traditional places are going to be spawning the next wave of media, and I think that's exciting.
Chris, you give me hope. Thank you for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Chris Schoenberger is editor-in-chief of First We Feast and is co-author with Justin Bolus of The Problems with Food Media.